Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Ramallah in Palestine is Max Blumenthal, an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and the New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. His latest article at Mondo Weiss is Shady PR Operatives, Pro-Israel Ties, Anti-Castro Money, Inside the Syrian Opposition's DC Spin Machine. And his forthcoming book is Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Welcome to Background Briefing, Max Blumenthal.
Great to be on with you, Ian.
And you've just been in Jordan visiting the Syrian refugee camps. Describe these extraordinary cities. I believe one of them is the fourth largest city now in Jordan, right in the middle of nowhere, sitting on an aquifer, no water, no sewage. It's a monumental problem for the Jordanian government, isn't it?
Well, it's a problem that's partly been created by the Jordanian government or established by the Jordanian government. And I'll get into that, but this is basically an open-air prison for 120,000 people, mostly from the Daraa region of Syria, which is the cradle of the revolution, the Syrian revolution. And it is, as you said, the fourth largest population center in Jordan. It's right on the Syrian border, and it's in a landscape that's starkly reminiscent of the Death Valley. You know, for your L.A. listeners, just imagine sleeping in a tent for 1 year in Death Valley with no toilet, very little water, living on grain, very poor grain and lentils. And that's kind of what these 120,000 people are experiencing. The entire camp is controlled by the Jordanian military. It's surrounded by a heavily militarized perimeter with barbed wire and surveillance. Very few people are able to leave. Most of the people I interviewed had not left the camp since arriving. And now very few people are able to get in. So there are children there that I met, 10 years old, whose mothers can't get in from Syria. And there are tens and tens of thousands of Syrian refugees on the Syrian side of the border, desperate to get in. And the Jordanian military is keeping them out. And the fear among these refugees is that they will, those people waiting on the border are the next to be attacked by Assad.
So what's your understanding of why the Jordanians are being duplicitous about their humanitarian? I mean, what they're putting out is we are the small nation overburdened and we're doing the Lord's work here in humanitarian terms. You're saying there's a certain cynicism here.
Yeah, it's like the Lebanese with the Palestinians. They don't want to integrate them into their society and give them civilian rights. The Jordan's controlled by a Hashemite minority already, and they don't want any more pressure. So they're literally warehousing these people. And when you go in there, I was given permission by the Jordanian government, to their credit, to go in. But it didn't come in time. So I actually sort of snuck into the camp with an experienced journalism professor from Amman who knows the people in the camp. And I was able to get a really unvarnished view of life in the camp because this woman really knew the people. And the conditions they're living in are just abominable, absolutely abominable. And you see the malnutrition in the children. You see that there's no psychological care. The kids are unable to go to school. You walk into a tent, which an entire family of 6 to 10 is sleeping in. You can't stand up in there. And you start asking questions about where they came from in Homs or Daraa. And it's like you're peering into a blood-spattered window into hell when you hear them talk about the massacres that they endured. 90% of the people I interviewed there, out of dozens of people, had survived the massacre, and the majority of them have had family members or neighbors slaughtered in front of them. And now they're sleeping in tents. There's a huge section in the camp of NGOs. In trailers, and there are bathrooms in that section. But when you go into the camp, people have to pay to get these sort of corrugated tin trailers that they refer to as caravans. They have to pay for it, otherwise they're stuck in tents. One old widow I interviewed could not sleep in her tent anymore because she was constantly attacked by snakes. So she went to sleep with another family. And so I interviewed the children of that family, and all they complained to me about was being attacked every night by wild dogs. So there's so much media and so much attention focused on the Zaatari refugee camp, and there are so many NGOs in there, but they can't seem to address any of these basic problems for these people who are basically being warehoused with no hope to return to where they're from.
And Max Blumenthal, you say there are even more people on the Syrian side of the border, just across the border, wanting to get into Jordan. So that would indicate that this is not a fate worse than death, right?
No, I mean, these people escape with their lives, but, you know, I also went to ask them what they thought of U.S. intervention in Syria, something that I'm staunchly against. I think could be disastrous and could create more refugees waiting on that border. And, you know, we can get into that, but what everyone in this camp wants is the U.S. to hit Syria as hard as possible. I mean, it's understandable. These are traumatized people who have witnessed their families massacred in front of their eyes. That's what they want. And one person told me it was particularly poignant, a man from Homs, whose village witnessed a massacre, he said, of 1,000 people from Shabiha and Syrian army forces. He told me, if you're not going to hit Syria, then hit us, because our life is unbearable here and we're dying every day inside. So that's their attitude. It's a nihilistic attitude, and it's completely uniform throughout the camp. People of all walks of life, although most in the camp are farmers who really want to go back to their land. The only way they see a path to return is through foreign intervention. It's just really unfortunate that, you know, from my perspective, U.S. intervention won't actually give them what they want.
Well, they're not getting what they want and need from the international humanitarian community. This is obviously being run by the UNHCR. So who's not ponying up? You've got all those NGO people living in air conditioning trailers right next to these people who are suffering so much. Is this just a comment on the kind of the realities of international humanitarian activity?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the fact that none of these NGOs are able to put any pressure on the Jordanian government, which is sort of a strategic bulwark for the U.S. between Israel and Syria and Iraq and Saudi Arabia. You know, the U.S. is not going to put any pressure on the Jordanian government. It's the Jordanian military that controls this camp. It's the Jordanian military that's keeping the Syrian refugees out of the camp. It's the Jordanian military that's keeping them on the border. It's the Jordanian military that they say is stealing their passports and preventing them from ever leaving the camp, keeping them basically in an open-air prison. And it's, you know, at the head of this whole thing, it's the great U.S. ally, King Abdullah. This is happening under his watch. So the people there, they don't want better aid. That's not what they were telling me. They want some kind of solution so they can return, so they don't wind up like Palestinians who are living in these camps in perpetuity, if not for eternity. Their wounds are still fresh, and they, you know, the one thing to them that will heal the wounds is that they can go back over the border. I had one 12-year-old girl tell me that when Assad falls, I'll walk back to my village in Daraa. And she was wearing sandals. I said, "You're going to walk with those little sandals?" She said, "I'll walk barefoot." That's the mentality in this camp.
And again, I'm speaking with Max Blumenthal, who's in Ramallah, Palestine. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and a New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. His latest article at Mondo Weiss is Shady PR Operatives, Pro-Israel Ties, Anti-Castro Money, Inside the Syrian Opposition's DC Spin Machine. And his forthcoming book is Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. But the news today that the Russians have run with this offhand remark that Secretary of State Kerry made about that the Syrians, if they allowed international oversight over their chemical arsenals and had them removed and destroyed, then maybe we won't bomb them. And the Russians and the Syrians are running with that idea, and it may well avoid this U.S. impending attack. What would these people in the camps think of the idea that Assad has been let off the hook?
The people in the camps already feel like Assad has been let off the hook because the U.S. has telegraphed its punches and said that the Obama administration has gone to Congress and is waiting so long and going over so many political hurdles. I think I'm glad Obama went to Congress because we can actually have a democratic decision about going to war. But what people in the camp told me was very informed by their own conversations with people back in the villages and towns where they live. One woman from a town called Suleiman, to the east of Homs, I think, told me that the Assad regime had begun moving tanks into the town. And this is a town where they committed massacres in April. I think there was a notorious massacre on April 25th. And the commander came and said, "We're going to give you preferable treatment, provide you with services and food if you allow us to keep these tanks here, because then the tanks will be in a residential area that the U.S. won't be able to bomb." And the people in the camp believe that Assad is basically hiding and stashing all of his important field equipment in towns that the Syrian army controls, and that no U.S. strikes will have any effect on his military capacity. And so, therefore, it won't turn the tables in favor of the Free Syrian Army.
But when you say that the young 12-year-old girl with these thin sandals is prepared to walk back across the desert to her hometown of Deraa on the border inside Syria when Assad falls, it doesn't look like Assad's going to fall, does it?
In fact, John Kerry testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that Assad will not fall. And yesterday he said these will be incredibly small attacks. Which means, what does that mean, incredibly small attacks? I've never heard a U.S. leader say something like this before. Are they going to have a flaming paper bag on Assad's doorstep, courtesy of Obama's dog, Bo? I mean, what does this mean? And at the same time, Kerry is saying this is a Munich moment. In other words, Assad is Hitler, but we're going to attack him with incredibly small attacks. So it's really a confusing message coming out of Washington, and the people in the camp are confused. And what they want is punishing airstrikes. One woman told me, "Bring all our houses down. We accept civilian casualties, and we'll build the houses again." You know, and I don't accept that. I don't think that's going to resolve anything. But that's the attitude of people in the camps who've been traumatized and witnessed their families massacred in front of their eyes.
But this even greater population that you mentioned that's just inside Syria on the border wanting to get out, but the Jordanian army won't let them in to these horrible conditions that the refugees that have escaped are living under, that if Assad wins, then wouldn't they be massacred or in danger? I mean they'd be caught between a rock and a hard place, right?
That's such an important question. And when I interviewed the adults, pretty much anyone who was an adolescent or over, they refused to give me their real name or their full name. They would not have their faces photographed. The children are happy to be photographed. They love being photographed. But the adults, if the adults are behind the children, there are some women behind the children, they'll cover their faces with their hijab. That's the level of terror that they're experiencing. They feel like if their names are ever recorded anywhere, that Assad's Mukhabarat will record their name and they'll never be able to go back. And if they go back, they'll be tortured to death. Not just that, but the level of fear in the camp is so intense that many people told me they fear that Assad will attack them with chemical weapons, just to wipe them out as the final blow in his victory tour. I mean, obviously, I don't think there's any basis for saying that. It's just that really speaks to the level of fear that he's managed to instill in this population. I mean, it's incredible. You walk to any part of this camp, the new arrivals section, the older residents were there for 12 or 11 months. And it's just stunning how comprehensive the campaign of violence and massacres Assad was able to carry out was, that everyone there, 120,000 people, has directly experienced a massacre or shelling.
So what's your explanation, Max Blumenthal, for attitudes on the American left, who are much more critical now of the Syrian opposition and keep referring to the al-Nusra front as the jihadis and saying, you know, there was a front page picture on the New York Times the other day of them executing a bunch of captured Syrian soldiers. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that this whole agony in Syria is brought on by the dictator. In the town of Dara, they rose up. And some teenage boys, I think about 14 or 15, wrote some graffiti on the wall against the divine right of the ruling family, and they were tortured and mutilated in response. And that is how the Assads do business. And they brought this destruction upon this country because they insist that it's their divine right to rule, and it's either the Assad family or the terrorists. And that... I'm astounded that people don't see who really are the people that have brought about this agony and who essentially to this day not only won't take responsibility for what's happening in their own country, but they're prepared to bring the whole place down if indeed their rule is threatened.
The issue is how to end the agony. It's not really a debate anymore about who's responsible. Obviously, I hold Assad responsible. We did an interview, I think, a year ago about my resignation from Al-Akhbar, which is a leftist Lebanese publication. I resigned over the fact that they had slanted their editorials and coverage in favor of Assad. And I believe that he is a brutal criminal who needs to go. There's no way around that. And he's not an anti-imperialist hero. And Hezbollah's activities in Syria have really lowered their credibility in the Arab world. And so I think the issue is how do you end this misery? And the U.S. has done very little to push on Russia and push on Iran. And Russia and Iran I've seen reports that they're coming up with a counterproposal to a U.S. strike. Which sounds positive. But the issue is a U.S. strike going to do anything to end the misery of these people in Zaatari and the misery of the refugees in the border? And it's just from an objective standpoint. I think it's only going to exacerbate the situation. Obama and Kerry are talking about a symbolic strike. Obama called it a shot across the bow. And that's not anything that's going to change the situation on the ground. If anything, Assad will emerge after U.S. strikes, declare victory, and then increase repression. What I've heard from one person I interviewed from Homs is that detonated dynamite charges have been placed in a central prison in Homs, which is filled with political prisoners, and they're just preparing to detonate at any minute if the U.S. strikes. I've heard that prisoners were moved into sensitive areas that the U.S. might strike. So we're looking at a situation where repression increases, Assad's power is potentially consolidated, and the U.S., if it's judged that the U.S. strike doesn't work in the beginning, it could escalate. It could escalate beyond this incredibly small strike that Kerry promised into something that could last for weeks and cause massive civilian casualties, could involve Iran, could involve Hezbollah. Who knows what could happen? I think that's really where the left is coming from, and from its anti-interventionist standpoint. And I'm really, I really sympathize with the third way standpoint that emerged from the Arab left at the beginning of the revolution, which is an anti-Assad, an anti-U.S. intervention perspective that the Syrian people are going to have to be able to demonstrate agency and be the real owners after Assad is gone.
But nothing's going to get rid of Assad. So this looks like evil will triumph. And what would it take to get rid of Assad? Short of what, international or unilateral intervention.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of intervention will get rid of them, and what will come after? Those are serious questions that need to be entertained. And I don't think al-Nusra is particularly as strong as the left and the anti-war movement is making it out in the U.S., but the Iraqi wing of al-Qaeda is appearing increasingly at the front lines. And FSA is, I mean, they're not exactly some heroic figures that I really identify with. But then again, I've always said this, Syrians have a right to take up arms against Assad. He's a criminal. He has to go. But the U.S. doesn't seem to have any clear, coherent plan, and that speaks to the unpopularity of this war. No one really understands what they want when Kerry says there has to be a political solution, and at the same time, they're promising airstrikes.
Well, Max Blumenthal, I thank you for joining us, and we'll have to just do a follow-up because it looks as if there may be a way out if the Russian and the Russian offer may well be accepted, and Assad will live to rule another day, so unfortunately.
I hope this offer is accepted, and there are political forces in Washington that will fight against this, what could potentially be a really reasonable offer. One of those forces is AIPAC, which is not particularly interested in Syria. It's interested in the U.S. attacking Iran on behalf of the Israeli government. It's interested in the U.S. tightening sanctions on Iran. And one of the things that Iran might ask for is a loosening of sanctions, which would be, you know, a completely reasonable proposal to ameliorate the misery of all these people. And so we have to start looking at the forces in Washington that are working against conciliatory measures. We have to look at the fact that the FSA has rejected dialogue repeatedly, as well as the fact that Bashar Assad is a brutal criminal and has to go. But I think we have to really, as Americans, be most critical about the forces in Washington and our political system that are making it that are darkening the future of the people I met in the Za'atari refugee camp beyond the level that Assad has.
But these are people, though, that have said to you they want the U.S. to bomb this guy, and they want their own homes blown up. So I just wanted to end up with a coherent message here, because I understand the dilemma of being against U.S. intervention on the one hand, but how do you deal with this evil regime?
You and I have no influence over the outcome of this. The Obama administration's made up its mind, and it's possible that it'll bomb, regardless of what Congress does. And at this point, I mean, you're looking at 190 votes leaning against or against use of force. So they're going to have to make up their mind, and we'll see what happens. It troubles me that it may have reached a situation where it's too late. And it may be too late to do anything beyond diplomacy and some kind of negotiated solution. I thought maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago, the U.S. could have acted or intervened in a way that might have brought Assad down and prevented all these people from leaving. The people in Za'atari camp have left in the last most of them have left in the last 5 to 11 months. That was a key period. The Obama administration did nothing then for them. And it's waited till this arbitrary red line was crossed. People were being bombed at bakeries. People were being slaughtered waiting for bread at bakeries. The Obama administration did nothing. And this is another thing that people in the camps find puzzling and people in the U.S. find puzzling. But people in the camps have been reduced to a situation of desperation. They're comprehensively traumatized, and they're willing to accept any possible solution to give them a future, because right now they have none. And, you know, I think I'm staunchly against intervention for my own reasons, but as a journalist, I think their voices have to be heard, and we have to listen to them and put them at the center of the conversation we're having about intervening.
Well, Max Blumenthal, I thank you so much for joining us here from Ramallah in Palestine.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Max Blumenthal, who is in Ramallah, Palestine. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and the New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. His latest article at Mondo Weiss is Shady PR Operatives, Pro-Israel Ties, Anti-Castro Money, Inside the Syrian Opposition's DC Spin Machine. And his forthcoming book is Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with a broadcast from November the 19th with an analyst on the Syrian opposition and the war within a war amongst the rebels.